to present Victor Attia.
And my fellow Oregonians. This biennium has brought the longest regular session, the longest special session, and the shortest special session of the Oregon Legislature. This morning, we grimly make history with yet another special session. But this is history we are here to put behind us, just as we will put this tragic national recession behind us. Let's remind ourselves why we are here, and the list is familiar. Many decades of fiscal irresponsibility by the federal government have led us to record-breaking federal deficits, crippling high interest, a 180-degree turnaround in federal policy support for housing, confusion and uncertainty in financial institutions and markets, and slashes in aid to state and local government. The results in Oregon have been devastation in our timber industry, tragic, absolutely unacceptable levels of unemployment, and revenue shortfalls for the state, counties, cities, schools, and virtually every unit of government. Each of you knows we have taken actions at every level of state government to turn our economy around. We have maintained our track record of excellent management and increased productivity in state government, despite those financial constraints. We have far exceeded the efforts of other states in our resolve to face the hard issues. Finally, we are seeing positive signs at the national level in connection with inflation and interest rates. Finally, some cracks are showing in federal ignorance and indifference that have, in an effort to cool down the national economy, given Oregon pneumonia. Finally, there are glimmers of light amid the gloom. But in the meantime, a number of issues are clear. It is clear that Oregon did not lead the nation into recession. It is clear that Oregon did not create high interest rates. It is clear that Oregon did not produce the $1 trillion federal debt. We, along with two-thirds of these United States, are the victims, not the criminals. The state of Oregon cannot, under its constitution, spend more than it takes in. And I believe that is most responsible. But it does mean that every Oregonian has shared in the effects of the national economic downturn. Oregonians should know, as every elected official in this chamber must know, that there are no easy answers left to the hard questions. There are those who say that state government must tighten its belt. Tighten our belt? I can understand when some people who tell me about the need to reduce state government, but I become totally frustrated and exasperated when I'm lectured by people knowledgeable enough to know what has happened in state government during the past 3 years. My friends, the belt has never been tighter in the history of the state. I stood before you in this chamber, at this podium, in 1979. I said in my inaugural address to you that streamlining the operations of government without reducing its real services to people will be our goal. That will be the acid test of our credibility. And so it has been. In that address, as I concluded, I said I began my term with a promise and a challenge to set a high standard of performance as governor in all that I do. So I have. In 1979, before the recession, before the national downturn that put us on the defensive in Oregon, I cut $478 million from agency requests before those requests ever reached this chamber. The legislature approved my recommendation to hold the line on state budgets, and because of my budget cutbacks, was able to provide a major program of tax relief. In August of 1980, we met in special session to cut $122 million more from already lean agency budgets in a further effort to hold the line. In our first 1982 special session, another $68 million was cut from already tight agency budgets. In June, we cut $31 million more. In all, special sessions have cut over $221 million to date from already reduced state agency budgets in Oregon. Each of you have taken pay cuts. State employees have taken pay cuts. And I've cut my own salary three times. These cuts have come on the heels of some of the most significant management and program reforms Oregon state government has ever seen. In welfare, in workers' compensation, in energy, in human resource, in general services, in the employment division, we started those reforms before the economy forced us to. And I hate to think what we would face in balancing our budget this year without those reforms. Each of you deserves credit for helping us achieve them. And so here we are today. 3,785 fewer employees are in state government now than 2 years ago. 30,460 fewer welfare recipients are on the rolls in July 1982 than were there in July 1980. $5 million a month is being saved in welfare alone. Now we meet this morning to face a $91 million problem. You each know the alternatives other than the one before you. But let me review them for you. Should we raise taxes during this recession? No. Should we again cut our vital efforts in economic development? No. Should we again cut higher education? No. Should we take the last $200 of property tax relief left to Oregon property taxpayers? No. Should we again cut basic school support to elementary and secondary education after hard-pressed school districts have relied on the figures that we gave them? No. A 5% budget cut alone would reduce or eliminate critical programs for children, the elderly, the poor, law enforcement, secure prisons. A 5% budget cut alone would lay off many more state employees, swell the unemployment rolls, and further reduce our declining tax base. Every member of the legislature knows full well that without passage of the proposal before you today, we will of necessity be forced to consider cuts 2.5 times greater than the 5% cut. Such an unprecedented, irretrievable cut in basic government would rend the fabric of society that government exists to protect. Now let's turn to the compromise proposal before you. It is easy to criticize this proposal. It is easy to criticize the legislative leadership and the governor who drew up this proposal. It is easy to criticize the majority of the membership of the House and Senate who committed themselves to support this proposal. It is not so easy to put forth any responsible alternative to this proposal that is acceptable to the people of Oregon. To criticize this proposal without offering any alternatives shows a gross lack of leadership and courage. Those of you in this chamber, elected to your high office by the people of the state of Oregon, know that hard choices based on hard facts are what you've been elected to make. You know that attacking and undermining these choices without proposing acceptable alternatives is wrong. You know it's wrong. At a critical time like this, every one of us must put aside politics, put aside party labels, put aside our differences in the best interest of the citizens we are here today to represent. There is a terrible misunderstanding among the working people and the business people of this state about the impact of SAFE on our budget proposal. Some of this misunderstanding has been generated and circulated by the very people who know the real facts of the matter. And that is why the misinformation is all the more inexcusable. This proposal in no way damages or impairs the interests of Oregon business. This proposal will in no way damage or impair the interests of Oregon workers. This proposal will in no way damage or impair the fiscal integrity of SAFE. Let me clear the record specifically right now. Not a single worker in this state will lose benefits as a result of this proposal. The speculation of lost dividends or higher premiums is just that, speculation. The $81 million assessment of SAFE's surplus in lieu of taxes is not $81 million in employer premiums. It is investment earnings, profits built up over decades, in a large part a result of investments by state government itself. Because SAFE is a public corporation, SAFE has not been required to pay state and federal taxes. Had we required SAFE to pay, over $85 million in taxes would be owed to state and federal government between 1977 and 1981. The Oregon legislature has given SAFE the privilege and the freedom to operate in the private sector, yet retain its status as a state entity. As a result, SAFE has enjoyed all the advantages of state government and all the advantages of private corporations. It is now SAFE's turn to shoulder its share of the burden we all have shouldered in the past, maintaining the fiscal integrity of the state. The chairman, the president, and two officers of SAFE met with me, with the Attorney General of Oregon, and with the insurance commissioner last Thursday. The arguments facing the legislature this week were examined in detail. Many of the same questions were raised. The leadership of each chamber was consulted, and so, as best we could, were each of you. That is the record. To that record, I now add a promise. The one-time assessment of SAFE is just that, one time. Every Oregonian knows that this governor is a keeper of promises. If any future effort is made to impose a similar obligation on SAFE, I will fight to see it go down to defeat. If legislation is passed seeking to use SAFE monies for this purpose in the future, I will veto that legislation. Because with this proposal, SAFE will have met its obligation to Oregon. For workers and businesses who still think our proposal takes money from their pockets, let me tell them some things they may not know or may have forgotten. Oregon business is paying $80 million less per year right now for workers' compensation because actions that I and we have taken during the last 3.5 years. For unemployed workers, the weekly benefit amount has risen, and 3 supplemental benefit programs have been enacted at my request or with my strong support. All this has occurred without increasing the cost of the program for Oregon business. Regulations have been eliminated, paperwork reduced, claims and administration speeded up, and assistance programs put into action, saving time and money for Oregon workers and Oregon business. Without this proposal, many basic state programs of concern to both business and workers could be placed in jeopardy by budget cutting requirements. Given the truth about this proposal, every citizen of this state should give it wholehearted support as the only acceptable choice in a range of difficult and unacceptable options. President Hurd, Speaker Myers, Senator Meeker, Representative Hanneman, for 2 days last week, you met with me for long hours, gave your best counsel, consulted with your membership, and worked closely with me to make the right decision for the people of Oregon. And I am deeply grateful for your bipartisan cooperation. Only when consensus was reached did I call this special session. Once again, we are ready to make hard and difficult decisions, not with enthusiasm, but with a firm Oregon spirit of fairness, balance, and determination. The spirit and the willingness of members to put aside differences and work together to move us forward out of this shortfall is an example for legislatures everywhere facing similar problems. My friends, the package before you is not complicated. It does not pretend, nor does it seek, to answer every criticism, every barb, every allegation. What this package does is to balance our budget. And it does it so much better than any of the painful, absolutely unacceptable alternatives. I called you into session today because of the assurance that the majority of you share that belief. You, as well as I, want to see this special session meet, review the package, approve it, and go home. I hope we can show the people of Oregon today that for the third time this year, our state was eyeball to eyeball with the recession, and for the third time this year, Oregon did not blink. Thank you.
Senators Isham and Smith and Representatives Cairns and Hanneman will escort Governor Attia from the House.
I wasn't able to contact very many of the members of the Republican caucus on the Senate side. However, the members that I did talk with supported the concept that it was presented to you by the governor. The alternatives of reducing property tax relief without some kind of a limit on the other side is not at all acceptable to the Senate Republicans, nor cuts in basic school support are acceptable. So this appears to be about the only compromise that would be acceptable. Now keep in mind I have other members of the caucus to talk to, but so far that's
you said support. Cuts in PTR
without some kind of limit on taxes or a homeowner relief, statutory or constitutional, to protect the homeowner.
Well, you don't have that in this program.
Well, if you'll recall, Senate Republicans did advocate a program in a letter to the governor.
It's not in this program.
It's not in this program, no.
How does that mean that you're going to submit something in the special session, constitutional amendment or whatever?
If we can get consensus to get the special session over with in one day, the Senate Republicans will not advance any program.
Harding, Fred, what is the time? I mean, select a date when you'd like to have the legislators come to town for, and how long do you expect it will take to get this through?
We'd like to have the session as soon as possible in September. We'll, on the Senate side, I'll be calling the members tonight and tomorrow and get the word to the governor as soon as we completed that process. And he's indicated that as soon as he receives the consensus votes, then he will set the date. And I think we're all agreed that we want it as early in September as possible.
What date are you looking at, all four of you?
I think we've agreed, I believe the governor agrees, that if we can report consensus support, that the earliest feasible date, an early feasible date, would be perhaps a week from tomorrow for the session.
Is that the date when you call your members, you'll say, we're looking at this date, how's this fitting with your schedule?
Yes, I think we probably all would plan to mention the schedule question in the process of also talking about the program. But the governor, as I understand it, the governor will not set a date until we have reported where we are.
And you expect to try and accomplish that by end of business day tomorrow?
Yes.
You don't have to give your members 5 days notice or anything like that, do you? You're under
no. No, there's some machinery that has to be set up in the process.
Are you all going to start the nose counting now? Mm-hmm.
Just like the National Guard, you know, when you
get called up, you get called and go.